Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Striking mine workers take their fight to Wall Street again. This week's elections, what happened and what now for unions? And today on the show, Kellyanne Ferraro on living wills and trusts, and Senator Sherrod Brown talks infrastructure. Welcome to the Thursday, November 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available now on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, the platform known as Stitcher. Dana DePiro is going to be our first guest on the show. She's one of the partners at Kelly & Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. Dana joined the firm back in 2004 as an associate. Previously, she worked for a law firm handling personal injury cases. She's a graduate from Cleveland Marshall College of Law in Cleveland State. She also went to undergrad school at Miami University, majored in speech and organizational communications. She's also been selected for inclusion in what's called the Super Lawyers Magazine, a rising star. And I'll tell you, she is a good one. She's been on the show before, and she specializes now primarily in probate law. And for nearly 25 years, the lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro have represented families in probate courts throughout the state of Ohio. The lawyers can help with planning services to make end-of-life decisions, final wishes known to family members prior to death, which can relieve much of the emotional toll of losing a loved one, and also provide practical guidance about what the person wanted after they passed on. And a lot of people put off estate planning. I, for one, this is something you just don't want to deal with because, well, first of all, you think you're going to live forever. And then a lot of people think they don't have enough money or assets to warrant an estate plan. You have to remember this. Estate planning is not about your estate. It's about planning for end-of-life care and final wishes. We're talking last will and testament, financial powers of attorney, health care powers of attorney, a living will. We'll cover all of this with Dana. And the fees usually come out of the estate, and she'll get into the specifics on all of this. She's really, really well-versed. In fact, she's already helped me out on an instance dealing with the title of my home, and we'll touch on that as well. Especially if you're married, you pass away, and maybe the home is in your name. Could be in both of your names, but you got to look at the fine print. Let me put it that way, especially on the deed itself. So Dana's going to be our first guest later in the show. Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. He's going to bring us up to speed on what's going on with the infrastructure talks in Washington. The senator was in Cleveland just a couple of weeks ago with Marty Walsh, the labor secretary. And he met with home care workers and disability advocates to discuss the president's plan to invest in home and community-based services. Under our current long-term care system, way too many people cannot access the care they need in their homes and communities, and that's where they want to stay. That's where they want to be. So we'll touch on that. We'll also touch on manufacturing. He met with what's called MAGNET, the Manufacturing Advocacy and Growth Network. And the whole idea here is to bolster manufacturing, bring those jobs back to China. We'll touch on that as well. During a recent Senate Finance Committee hearing, this was a nomination hearing, the senator pressed Maria Pagan, nominee for the deputy U.S. trade rep, position at the World Trade Organization on the need for reform at the WTO to hold China accountable and create a level playing field for American workers and businesses. Boy, we could go on and on with that one. So we'll touch on that, and you never know what the senator will bring up. He'll be our second guest on the show. Let's talk politics here. Whoa. What happened in America this week? In Virginia, multimillionaire private equity executive Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, will be the next governor, winning just over 50% of the vote in a very tight election against Terry McAuliffe, the former governor, who received the endorsement of some major unions but was lukewarm on issues relating to workers' rights. Youngkin, self-described as a pro-business candidate, has stated his opposition to raising the state's minimum wage. He also vowed to protect its so-called right-to-work law, which has been on the books for more than 70 years. Similarly, Republican candidate Jason Myers, member of the Virginia House of Delegates, who has voted against Medicaid expansion and raising the minimum wage, defeated the incumbent Mark Herring to become Virginia's next attorney general. Mark was a Democrat. This is a state that had a Democratic governor, Democratic legislature, state, and the House. And now, apparently, the House of Delegates is going Republican, as is the governor. And they had an opportunity to dump right to work, and they didn't do it. We always say elections matter. Voter turnout was not as strong there. Now, in New Jersey, they finally declared Phil Murphy the winner. He was the incumbent. That was close, and that was not supposed to be that close. Murphy will now be the first governor in more than 40 years to win consecutive gubernatorial terms. And I'll tell you, he's got a lot of union backing. Includes LIUNA, Labor's International, New Jersey Firefighters Mutual Benevolent Association, the New Jersey State AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Teachers there, State Troopers Fraternal Association of New Jersey, and the UFCW. The AFL-CIO hosted a rally for Murphy last month, calling him one of the most pro-union governors in the country. And as governor, he raised the minimum wage, putting the state on a path to $15 an hour by 2024. Also enacted a sweeping legislative package designed to combat worker misclassification. Signed into law bills that provide paid sick time to workers in the state and increase penalties for wage theft, among many other pro-worker legislative initiatives. And he just squeaked by. He wouldn't have done that if he didn't have all the labor support, no doubt. Now let's go to Boston. City Council member Michelle Wu, a Democrat, became the first woman of color elected mayor in the capital of Massachusetts. Wu, a political protege of Senator Elizabeth Warren, was endorsed by Teamster Local 25, 32BJ, SEIU. We just had them on the show. The Office of Professional Employees, Local 453, the Alliance of Unions at the MBTA, that's a transit authority. She also campaigned on bold progressive causes, including eliminating fares for the city's public transportation system, implementing a Boston Green New Deal that would achieve net zero municipal emissions by 2024, and decarbonize the city entirely by 2040. She also imposed rent control to combat, this is when she was on the city council, to combat the city's affordable housing crisis, and promoted economic justice and worker empowerment. In New York City, borough president of Brooklyn and former police captain Eric Adams easily won the race for mayor in the Big Apple. He received the endorsement, backing, and financial support from some, though not all, of the city's largest unions. That includes AFSCME, District Council 37, again 32BJ, SEIU, and the Hotel Trades Council. Just a snapshot of what happened in America 2 days ago. Now let's talk about what's going on in labor. A circuit judge in Alabama is restricting the mine workers' constitutional rights to freedom of speech and assembly as the union strike against Warrior Met Coal enters its eighth month. Can you believe that? Started April 1st. The Constitution of the United States protects American citizens' rights to stand on the side of a road and call a scab. That came from Cecil Roberts, president of the International, talking about the court decision last week. We remain ready to engage in serious and good faith negotiations to resolve this dispute, but this temporary restraining order will not stop our strike. We are stronger than the mere location of our picket lines. Well, the union held a massive rally today in New York City. This was right on Wall Street, putting pressure on the investors. And again, this is Warrior Met, owned by a hedge fund. Just to recap the story, when Warrior Met was facing financial times, like many of the coal companies in America, the company asked them to take a pay cut, cut back their benefits. They did. Well, guess what? Things turned around. They're making money, a lot of money, and they won't do anything. So that's why the workers are on strike. And it looks like they bought the judge off, too, the way this story is reading right now. All right, another one here, and more than 1,000 workers represented by SEIU and laboring in the service and maintenance units at Cabell Huntington Hospital in West Virginia announced a strike. That started yesterday. After months of talks, members of the bargaining unit rejected the hospital's last, best, and final offer on Tuesday night. And the contract between SEIU District 1199 and the hospital expired. Union reps are seeking higher wages, safer working conditions, and continued health insurance coverage for their members. No surprise there. Let's now go to Buffalo, New York. For more than a month now, hundreds of healthcare workers have been on strike against Catholic Health. Members of the Communication Workers of America Local 1133 who work at Mercy Hospital. They've been standing strong for their patients as they fight for a fair contract, and they got support from all around the country. Well, got some good news. After a marathon bargaining session, the union's negotiating committee provided an update just a day ago, saying that a deal was very close. The union explained that one of its highest priorities, ensuring safe staffing levels, remains unresolved. So they're still working on that one. And finally, NABTU, the North American Building Trades Unions, announced a landmark national agreement with Amtrak to promote a strong construction workforce pipeline of union members to build and expand America's passenger rail. The agreement will accelerate apprenticeship readiness programs, promote diversity, ensure fair wages and benefits for the construction workforce on Amtrak projects. Sean McGarvey, who's been on the show a number of times, he is the president of the Building Trades, National Building Trades. He said this agreement opens more career pathways of opportunities for our members and enables our gold standard training model. Boy, he's right about that. Gold standard training model to deliver the highest quality work for Amtrak. Our highly trained men and women professionals have the best craft skills in the world. With this agreement, we will continue to expand our diverse workforce and strengthen the economies of more communities all across the land. That's a great story. And I tell you, I just wish they would expand. There's been a fight over Amtrak for years. Many in Washington wanted to cut their funding, although they use it in the Northeast. It's very profitable in the Northeast. Other parts of the country are not. But if they enhanced it, they build upon it, things could change because trains are pretty popular, especially in Europe and other parts around the world. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dana DePiro, Our segment coming up with Kelly and Ferraro, talking about living wills, trust, probate, all that coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, which is AWF Union Podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter. Also the same, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line right now. Welcome back to the show, Dana DePiro. Dana is a partner at Kelly and Ferraro, who's been advertising with us for a number of years now, kelly-ferraro.com. And she's here to talk about estate planning, the importance of making sure you have all your ducks in a row. I mean, this is not what you call a comfortable thing to do, but we don't live forever. And you got to plan for these moments in our life. Dana, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, let's just start and educate our listeners right now about the facts that they need to know. And let's get real basic here. Let's talk about probate and estate planning. What is probate and estate planning? Can you get into all of that first?
Sure. Probate and estate planning is planning for when you pass away. Which is not a topic that people want to discuss, as you previously said, but it's something that needs to be done because it's not if you pass away, it's when. So this is going to be a definite, this is going to happen to all of us. So the last act before you pass away is to tell people who you want to receive your stuff. And I know some people right now are probably thinking, well, you know, I'm not Bill Gates. You know, I'm not Elon Musk. I don't have a ton of money. What does it matter? Well, they're the one percenters. You know, the rest of us, the rest of the working world here, we might not have millions of dollars, but we still have assets that we need to be able to safeguard and protect and give to our loved ones. So that is what the estate planning process is for. It's for you to sit down and decide, you know, I have this home. Who's going to get this house? And if it's, you know, you're with a spouse and you're both on the deed, you know, you need to make sure that when you pass, that spouse gets 100% of the house, not just half of the house. So you need to look at some of the assets that you have, you know, bank accounts or other things that, you know, you have to look at and see, is there someone else on there with you? When you pass, do they get all of it? Do they only get 50% of it? You know, if you have a beautiful car, you know, a muscle car that you work on, you know, who are you going to give that to? So this is an opportunity for you to point out and direct people how you want your funds and assets divided up.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned at the top of the show how you helped me out on my deed to my house, and you just touched on that now. Let's start right there, because I think that's really important. There's a lot of people listening right now that own their home, and many are trying to buy a home. The housing market's on fire right now. This is good advice, especially if you're sitting down and planning all this out. So talk to me about that. If both names or one name's on the deed, explain that part for me and how important that is in case one person passes away. Go ahead.
Sure. Most people, when you buy a home, if you buy it with your significant other, you get the house in both of your names, and that would be what's called joint.
Okay.
But you need to make sure your deed has what's called a survivorship, because that means that person A and B own the home jointly. But if person A passes away, person B then, who survives, gets 100% ownership of that house. So, again, it's not just joint. It has to be joint with rights of survivorship. So, for example, in my case, I am married. If I pass before my husband, he gets 100% of the house, and it transfers over immediately. If we didn't have that, if one of us wasn't on there with survivorship, or if we were just a single person and we owned our own townhouse. If there's nobody else as a backup, then that house has to be part of the probate process. And that's where your will would come in, where you would say, hey, I want, my parents to have my home or something like that.
Uh-huh. So even if both names are on the deed, if you don't have that survivorship and one passes away, technically, if the husband passes away first, the wife would only get 50%, even if they don't have that survivorship, that joint survivorship then, right?
The basic answer is yes. Now, again, with probate, the spouse with the spousal allowance and things like that, yes, she can end up getting the other 50%. So it's not the end of the world. But again, it could be so easy that it never crosses over into the court. By just simply taking a look at your deed. And if your deed doesn't have that, then a real simple quick claim deed will make that happen for you. So it's completely easy to do. It doesn't have to be expensive. And again, if somebody passes away today and their estate planning isn't in check, yes, that's what the probate courts are for. They can iron this all out. The spouse isn't just going to be left out in the cold. But you can avoid that.
Yeah.
Because once you go into court, as wonderful as the probate courts are in Ohio, it's going to cost you money.
Right.
So again, from a financial standpoint, a couple minutes on the front end is going to save you a lot of money on the back end.
Exactly. Yeah. That's really good advice. And I thank you for helping me out on that. I had no idea. And I'll tell you, a lot of people listening right now, I'm sure they're in the same boat that I was in. Now, what about bank accounts? Let's switch over there. Now, if you have both names on a bank account and one person dies, how does that work out? Is it similar? I mean, is there a survivorship element in that component as well?
Sure, there can be. And again, this is something that's really easy. You can take your bank statement, see your local branch, sit down with them and ask them, how is my account set up? For example, if you have the husband and wife, scenario, you both names are on a checking account, but is it with survivorship? If it is, then that means, when one of you passes, the other one gets it. If you have your own checking account for whatever reason, you're single or you keep your finances separate, then you can do what's called a transfer on death or a payable on death, which means you own that account 100%. It's solely in, Flash's name. But when Flash dies, then it transfers over to person X. And that's listed right on your account. It will be in your bank record so that when that person passes away, they just have to work it. The other person just walks in with a copy of the death certificate, says, hey, I'm the TOD, and that account then becomes theirs. And again, it's very simple. You just go to your local branch with your bank account information, you sit down, and they'll be able to tell you, yes, you're set up and you're good to go. Or, no, we gotta work this out a little bit. And it's very simple, it's quick, it's easy, and a couple minutes on the front end, again, just makes it a whole lot more cost-effective and efficient on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dana, We're speaking with Dana DePiro, who's one of the lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. They practice nationwide, too, 1-800-398-1795, 1-800-398-1795. What you're telling me and our listeners right now, is this something you consult with? Is there a something on the website that kind of guides people? You indicated these are simple things that one can do to prepare for end of life. That's what this is all about. Is there like a A, B, C, D, C kind of thing? Do you, when I call Kelly and Ferraro, if I go to the website, kind of like a toolkit type of thing that I can prepare for? Does anything like that exist, Dana?
On our site, you can, you know, reach out and contact us. You would speak to one of the probate attorneys in the office. There are fees, and we would kind of walk you through a questionnaire. So, yes, we do have, I'll call it a questionnaire that we ask and go through just to kind of pick your brain to see what you do and don't have. And, you know, again, the average American is going to go, listen, I don't have a lot of stuff. I'm not a multimillionaire. I don't have a lot of stuff. How do I have to do this? But once you start having that conversation and, like I said, picking their brain a little bit and filling out the questionnaire, you can see that there are some tweaks that can be done to, again, protect you for, you know, your family and get your loved ones ready to go.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, a lot of people think they don't have a lot of stuff, but I bet you've been through this before. When they sit down and start tabulating everything, they probably, wait a minute, I didn't know I had all this. I bet you that's happened in your career, has it?
Yes, it has, yes.
That's interesting, yeah. It's so important that you get this done, and someone like Dana DePiro can definitely help you out. You know what, I'm going to take a quick break. Dana DePiro with us on our live line from Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com, two L's in Kelly, and that's K-E-L-L-E-Y-Ferraro, two R's in Ferraro, F-E-R-R-A-R-O. We'll continue the conversation after this. Also, later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown's going to talk to us about infrastructure and much more. Hopefully, we're getting closer to the finish line on that one. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 different platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, and we're getting more of those. Before we get back to Dana DePiro, Just want to plug the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We've had them on the show. Scott Paul is the executive director. And they are coming out with their 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. If you have a favorite Made in the USA company that you think would be a good fit for the list, send them an email. Gift guide, all one word, at aamfg.org. This is the eighth year of putting together the gift guide, and over the years, some of the best ideas, said Scott, come from people like you listening to this show. So just send it in, and the deadline is closing here. I think they got another week on this to do this, and we'll bring Scott on the show to talk about the different gifts that you can buy. And I'll tell you, keep it made in America. We're hearing a whole lot that, oh, you better buy your gifts now because they're still sitting on a dock over on the West Coast. We got a backup there that's been going on for weeks, if not months. So look for Made in America gifts. Again, the email, if you want to suggest a company, giftguide@aamfg.org. Giftguide@aamfg.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dana DePiro. On behalf of one of our sponsors here, great attorneys, Kelly and Ferraro. And usually when they come on the show, they talk about asbestos litigation or Zantac. They do all of that, and they do a great job. They also handle probate, and Dana is an expert at it. Actually, for 25 years, their probate lawyers have represented families in probate courts all through the entire state of Ohio. And we talked about what's probate, estate planning, the importance of being prepared for end-of-life issues. It's not a comfortable thing, but you got to do it. You got to do it. Dana, let's talk about estate planning here. Let's get into that. And next of kin, this is where you start getting into the mapping of everything that needs to be done. So let's start in living wills and things like that. So you could pick it up from there. What's the best advice you can give our listeners on all of this?
Sure. The easiest thing to do is create a will. And that, again, doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be time-consuming. A will just tells everyone who you want to receive your proceeds. Who do you want to get your assets? So you can meet with a local attorney. Again, you don't have to do something complex like a trust or anything like that, but the will can say, you know, I want my spouse to receive everything, or I want certain people to receive certain bequests. For example, earlier, you know, we talked about maybe you have a muscle car or something like that, and let's say you worked on it with your son. You can put in your will that you leave that muscle car to your son, and then everybody knows, okay, he gets that. And you want to leave your string of pearls to your daddy, you can do that. You want to make a donation out of your estate to, you know, the local church, you can do that also in your will. And your will list, you know, who you want to receive. It'll name your spouse. It'll name your children. And it's really important to put who your children are, especially in this day and age, because some families are blended, and not all children are your natural children. You know, they could be legally adopted. They could be your stepchildren. And in Ohio, the courts are very specific on who is considered your next of kin. So it's nice to have that in your will so we know who are your next of kin. And again, your will can also say who you don't want to receive settlements to. You know, we've drafted wills before that say, you know, I give X, Y, and Z to this child, and I specifically do not leave anything to this child, not that I don't love them, but I've previously taken care of them. Uh-huh. And so it lets everyone know that, you know, that child should not receive anything from your will.
Uh-huh. Now, once this is all laid out in the will, does that will have to be filed in some, either like the recorder's office or some court? Does that need to be done, Dana?
It doesn't need to be done immediately. When you have a will, you can do a couple things with it. There are some probate attorneys that will hold on to it for you. They will maintain the original for you. And then when you pass, your family comes and gets it. You can maintain it in your own home. You can maintain it on your person. You can put it in a safety deposit box or whatnot. or their third option is to file it with the probate court and put it what's called on deposit with the court, so that they keep it in a nice safe space. And you know, when you pass away, then your family goes right to the court, and it's already there.
Mm-hmm. What if once you make the will, and years later you want to make some changes? So-and-so is not going to get that amount of money, or so-and-so is going to get more money. How does that work out? Do you have to start fresh, or can you just make amended things to that will?
Sure. There's two ways you can do it. One, you can start fresh. Absolutely. And then the very first kind of part of your second will would say, I revoke all previous wills. So you can just start fresh and do it all new. Or if there's just one specific section, like you mentioned, there's someone that you want to add or remove or whatnot, you can do what's called a codicil, which is like an amendment, which the codicil would say, hey, listen, everything in my will, I want to maintain the same thing except this one section, and this is the section that I'm changing. So then it would be attached to your will, like you said, almost like an amendment.
Uh-huh. I gotcha. Now, what happens when wills get contested? I'm sure you've dealt with this over the years. So-and-so passes on. It ends up in court, and that would be probate court, and perhaps there's a fight among siblings, and they say, you know what, Daddy didn't really mean that, and I should get more. What happens in a scenario like that?
Sure. Unfortunately, that does happen from time to time, and you see it a lot with, kind of celebrities and famous people. You know, Anna Nicole Smith was one of those cases where, the son contested the will because she was, his second wife and whatnot. So what you have to do, number one, is you have to make sure that the will was valid and the construction of it was accurate. So you have to make sure that the individual that chose to enter into that will, they made it of their own volition. They were of sound mind. They knew what they were doing at the time. They weren't creating that will under duress. No one was forcing them to add things or remove things from it. So you have to make sure that the individual had the right mental capacity to prepare it. And then, yes, people can contest it and they can say, hey, listen, that shouldn't have excluded me. I should be part of it. I should receive mm-hmm. part of it. And then, unfortunately, then they have to hire counsel and, it's got to go to court and you kind of work it out in the court system. So it's not always the easiest thing to do, but it can be done. Again, that's why it's important that if you have a specific request or if you want to disinherit someone, you clearly state that in your will that, I know that I am not going to give Flash any money. It's not for lack of love and affection. It's just that I've provided for him while he was living. Very clear, very succinct language that says, I recognize you, but I'm not leaving you anything.
You had to use my name. I tell you, this is really important stuff here, and it's important to go over all of this with a qualified attorney, and that's why we bring Dana DePiro to the show today. And I saw this on your website, again, kelly-ferraro.com. In the state of Ohio, the costs of a probate attorney are paid out of estate funds. So going back to our first segment, this is so important. The more you can do on the front end, the better off your family will be on the back end. And it's so important to do that. And I'll bet you, Dana, I bet you got many, many stories about that where people came to you and they did not have everything in order. And as a result, the probate has to kind of go through everything, and then obviously they're going to take their fees out of that, including the lawyers and including the court, and the more it drags on, the more it's going to cost. So you did mention, though, probate in the state of Ohio, pretty good system then, in your opinion?
Yeah, there's 88 counties, and yes, they all have some variety and differences, but they all follow the Ohio Revised Code, and they really do a lovely job. It's a sensitive court to be in, because typically you're there for, the passing of someone. They also do name changes and things like that, but typically you're there because someone has passed away. And they are very sensitive, they're very friendly, they're very knowledgeable. But one of the things to remember is that when you are in the probate courts, just like any court, they cannot give you legal advice. So you can't walk in and say, hey, how do I set this up? Or, hey, how do I do this? They legally cannot give you that advice. So that's why sometimes you need to consult an attorney and sit down with them. And again, it's cheaper on the front end to sit down with an attorney and talk it through than on the back end when you leave your family. And they now not only have the emotional baggage of your passing, but now they have all your stuff. And now they got to figure out what to do with it. You know, that can take a toll on them, both financially and emotionally.
Dana, that's all good advice. We appreciate what you and the attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro have done for our listeners. Great group of attorneys there. Again, like I mentioned, they specialize in a lot of asbestos, mesothelioma. We've had them on for Zantac cases, the CPAP machines, Roundup. I mean, very well-rounded. But Dana, specifically, and she's a partner, too. She's been zeroing in on probate, estate planning, living wills, all that stuff. The toll-free number, and this is a nationwide number, is 800-398-1795, 800-398-1795. Kelly-Ferraro, go to that website, too. You get acclimated with all the things that they do. And much, much more. All right, Dana, you take care. Stay safe and enjoy the holidays coming up. It's hard to believe that this is the end of 2021 already. But I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the new year. So take care, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you as well.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Senator Sherrod Brown. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you could check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Got a couple of minutes here before we join Senator Sherrod Brown, and I want to share with you a blog that I came across just the other day from a Teamster. His name is Ryan Johnson. He says, I'm a 20-year truck driver, and I'll tell you why America's shipping crisis will not end. Well, that got my attention, and I want to share it with you. Here's what Ryan says. I have a simple question for every expert who thinks they understand the root causes of the shipping crisis. Why is there only one crane for every 50, 100 trucks at every port in America? No expert will answer this question. Well, I'm a Class A truck driver with experience in nearly every aspect of freight. My experience in the trucking industry of 20 years tells me that nothing is going to change in the shipping industry. Let's start with understanding some things about ports. Outside of dedicated port trucking companies, most trucking companies will not touch shipping containers. And there's reason for that. Think of going to the port as going to Walmart on Black Friday. But imagine only one cashier for thousands of customers. Think about the lines. Except at a port, there are at least three lines to get a container in or out. The first line is the in gate, where hundreds of trucks daily have to pass through five, maybe 10 available gates. The second line is waiting to pick up your container. The third line is for waiting to get out. For each of those lines, the wait time is a minimum of an hour. And I've waited up to 8 hours in the first line just to get into the port. Some ports are worse than others, but excessive wait times are not uncommon. It's a rare day when a driver gets in and out in under 2 hours. By rare day, I mean maybe a handful of times a year. Ports don't even begin to have enough workers to keep the ports fluid, and it doesn't matter where you are, coastal or inland port, union or non-union port, it's the same everywhere. Furthermore, I'm fortunate enough to be a Teamster, a union driver, an employee paid by the hour. And here's the good part. Most port drivers are independent contractors. How many times have you heard me say this on the show? Most port drivers are independent contractors leased into a carrier who is paying them by the load. Whether their load takes 2 hours, 14 hours, or 3 days to complete, they get paid the same. And they have to pay 90% of their truck operating expenses. The carrier might pay the other 10%, but usually less. The rates paid to non-union drivers for shipping container transport are usually very low. In a majority of the cases, these drivers don't come close to my union wages. They pay for all their own repairs and fuel and all truck-related expenses. I honestly don't understand how many of them can even afford to show up for work. There's no guarantee of any wage, not even a minimum wage. And in many cases, these drivers make far below minimum wage. In some cases, they work 70-hour work weeks and still end up owing money to their carrier. That's a Teamster who knows the business 20 years. Again, his name is Ryan Johnson, and I'm going to contact National, see if I could track him down and get him on the show. I believe we have him on line number two right now, Senator Sherrod Brown. Hey, Senator, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Good to be back. Thanks, Flash.
All right, let's start with infrastructure. I'd like to know if we're going to get some kind of agreement here. I know Joe Manchin has been the stick in the mud on all this, but where are we right now, Senator? What's going to happen?
I know we've talked about this a long time, and it's maddening for everybody, including the tradespeople that want to go to work and build bridges and highways and lay wire and pipes and all with all that. First of all, we just don't have. I mean, there's we're not getting Republican help on a whole lot of these issues. All 50 Republicans are voting no, so most of what we have to do is we have to get all 50 Democrats on issue after issue, and there are one or two that are harder. I mean, no whining, but that's been the holdup. I think we're going to get both these bills passed. I think it's going to get to President Biden by Thanksgiving. I think we're close, and it's so important we do it. I mean, the whole point of this is we've seen, while profits have gone up and corporate executive compensation skyrocket, wages have been flat for years, and this bill will create jobs. It will be the biggest tax cut for working families in American history, the child tax credit. 90% of Ohio families with kids get it, and it will cut costs for people in prescription drugs and health care and education and housing and all of that. So that's what's so important.
I like what you're saying here. Manchin is saying, okay, we got agreement on the bipartisan deal. 19 Republican senators signed on. He said, let's do that. Let's get that done. We'll talk the reconciliation bill later on. Any thoughts on that?
Well,
what's your reaction?
We ought to do it all. We all do all together because it fits together. I mean, it's the infrastructure is great. It doesn't go as broad as it should. It doesn't include helping families deal with child care costs. It doesn't have the tax cut for working families in it, where 90% of Ohio families get a substantial couple, $3,000-$4,000 or more year tax cut. It doesn't do any of those things. So they ought to walk together. They ought to get done together. They ought to get to the president's desk together. And then we can move on to other things.
Okay. Okay. Senator, the child care thing is a big issue. And I am reading a lot of people, especially women, are not going back into the workplace because they don't get adequate child care. This reconciliation bill would solve a lot of that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I heard a guy on MSNBC, which is supposed to be the progressive TV station. I heard him this morning talking. He's a business guy, a real conservative business guy, has a lot of business, makes a lot of money, all that. He was talking about the reason people aren't going back to work is because government paid people to stay home and to be lazy, essentially. And that's just BS. The fact is that first of all, a lot of people didn't think it was safe to go back to work because their employers weren't looking out for them. Second, employers' wages weren't going up enough. Now they're starting to. But third, as you say, maybe the most important is child care, that a whole lot of women haven't come back because there's not safe, affordable, accessible child care because of this virus and because our country is not investing in it. We're the only rich country in the world that does nothing about family leave and helping with child care. And it's all about reducing the cost for parents so they can go back to work knowing that their children are safe and being able to afford it.
You were in the Cleveland area not too long ago, several weeks back, with Marty Walsh, our labor secretary, meeting with home care workers. Can you revisit that? How did that go for you?
Yeah, we did two things. One, we went to Magnet and talked about investing in manufacturing. And finally, we have an administration, as you know, that uses the word union, that cares about union workers, that cares about manufacturing, and puts workers at the center of economic policy. Prior to going to Magnet, we went to an SEIU hall where we met with a number of home care workers. These workers make $10, $11, $12 an hour. They take care of the most important people to us. We ought to increase the minimum wage. We need to invest in child care and home care, and that means helping families deal with the cost of home care. I mean, these workers are not paid much because it's the competitive pressures have been such that you need government to set the sort of the foundation under it so these workers make a living wage. But a woman in our first hearing when I was chair of the Banking Housing Committee, we did a dignity of work hearing, and a woman from southern West Virginia, grew up in coal country, she said, working and poor should not be in the same sentence. There are just too damn many cases, too many people in this country that are working hard, whether working for minimum wage or working for tips, whatever, and they don't have much to show for it, and that's just wrong. Dr. King said, no work is menial if it pays an adequate wage, and we need to think about that more.
Senator, one more question here, and deals with trade, which you built your foundation on over the years. And I see there was a hearing in Washington on the nomination of Maria Pagan for the U.S. Trade Rep in the World Trade Organization. Yeah. And it's 20 years since we did the trade deal, PNTR, with China, and we lost a lot of jobs. Do you feel that we're moving the needle in the right direction with China right now?
Yeah, we 30 years ago it was NAFTA, 20 years ago with PNTR with China. It was so obvious the damage it would do to Lorain and Mansfield and Cleveland and Canton and Ashtabula and all over the area that people listen to you, Flash. And we finally have a president that's recognized how wrong-headed this policy was. Trump talked about it, didn't do anything, really, except rail against China. We are actually engaging now. A big deal we got with the steel workers and the steel industry with the U.S.-EU agreement, so Europe can't count it as European-made when they buy the slabs from China and then melt them in Europe. So we're in a very different place now, much more aggressive, and the WTO can't just be a tool by which China bullies its competitors. Those days are over.
I like what I'm hearing. Senator, I know you got a tight schedule. Thank you for joining us here on America's Workforce.
All right. Thanks, Flash.
Senator Sherrod Brown on our live line. Love talking to him. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Dorsey Hager, the Central Ohio Building Trades, and Fred Redmond, the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.